Welcome to Wilderness Podcast, a passion project about wilderness and wild places, with your host, Adam Bronstein. Hello, thanks for tuning in to another episode of Wilderness Podcast, and this is another in the series I'm calling Wilderness 30 by 30, so thanks for joining along. If you haven't heard the previous episode on the America's Red Rock Wilderness Act with Terry Martin from the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance, please go back and check that one out. If you're listening via web browser, please exit out of that and go to your smartphone, open your favorite podcasting app, search on Wilderness Podcast. There you'll find the green logo with the bear. You can subscribe to catch future releases and check out past episodes like the one I did with Terry, and you can pick up where you left off on this one. This episode has been a long time coming, and I'm very excited to be speaking about the Northern Rockies Ecosystem Protection Act, NRERPA or NRERPA, with Mike Garrity, Executive Director with the Alliance for the Wild Rockies. NRERPA would protect 23 million acres of roadless lands across the Northern Rockies ecosystem. And this bill was first introduced back in 1992 and has steadily been gaining more sponsors in the House and the Senate. And it feels like this is the time to really be pushing this forward under the 30 by 30 initiative. And we have to think big and follow the science, as Mike talks about in this episode. We have to safeguard species that we care so much about, like the grizzly bear, the wolf, the wolverine, the Canadian lynx, and the bull trout. So many sensitive species that really depend on undisturbed wildlands. This is the largest wilderness bill since the 1970s, when Jimmy Carter protected vast swaths of the Alaska wilderness. This is a call to action, and this is a visionary bill and proposal. This is something that we can do and that we absolutely must do. And a big thank you to Representative Carolyn Maloney and also singer and songwriter Carole King for their endless dedication to seeing this bill passed. Keeping up the enthusiasm and the stamina is really something else. So thank you so much to everyone who's been working so hard to get this past the finish line. So Mike and I speak about the history of the Alliance, the work that they are involved with, how the Alliance has sued the Forest Service more than any other group in the country, all about the Northern Rockies Ecosystem Protection Act, protecting entire ecosystems over state-centric wilderness bills, protecting endangered species as a means of securing future wilderness, proposed landscape restoration work under NRERPA, livestock grazing buyout provisions, Native American considerations, prominent supporters of NRERPA, the economic benefits of the bill, progress in Congress, thinking big and considering almost inconceivable political changes in this country. I hope you enjoy this episode, and please reach out to your congressmen and women and ask that they co-sponsor NRERPA. We really need to get this bill passed in support of 30 by 30, and it's a very exciting bill, and I really hope to see this passed someday. It would be a dream come true. So thanks for tuning in, and I hope you enjoy the episode. Okay, Mike, thanks for joining me on the program today. I'm really excited to be speaking with you and talking about NRERPA. I've wanted to do an episode on NRERPA for, well, ever since I started the program. So I'm really excited to be talking with you about it today.
Well, thank you for having me on.
Well, let's just start out with some information about you and your background.
I am the director of the Alliance for the Wild Rockies. I've been the director for about 18 years. Before that, I was an environmental aide for Congressman Merrill Cook, who was a Republican from Utah. And before that, I taught environmental economics as a graduate student at the University of Utah for 6 years.
What's the backstory with Alliance for the Wild Rockies? How did that get started?
It was started in 1988, and it was formed to try and work with other grassroots groups to protect habitat for native species in the Northern Rockies. The Northern Rockies are considered Montana, Wyoming, Idaho, and Eastern Oregon and Washington. So we work with other grassroots groups when we agree on something, and when we don't, we don't. It's not a, we don't make everybody toe the line to everything we agree with.
You guys really work in the background quite a bit, and I really appreciate this about you guys. You're just kind of going along doing your thing, and the work is really important. What would you say are some of the most consequential issues that you've been involved with?
Well, lately, since it's a lot harder to get wilderness bills passed by Congress, we've been working really hard to protect habitat that would be designated under the Northern Rockies Ecosystem Protection Act through the courts. So whenever the Forest Service has proposed a project in NARIPA lands, we would end up making these lands no longer qualify as wilderness or no longer be good habitat for native species. We usually file a lawsuit in federal district court. And we've been very successful doing that. We win about 81% of the time. And the Congressional Research Office did a study several years ago and found out that the Alliance for the Wild Rockies sued the Forest Service more than any other group in the country.
Yeah, congratulations on that.
The Forest Service will propose a timber sale or some other project and ask members of the public if they would like to submit comments. And that's how we get standing to sue, or I guess the technical term is we exhaust our administrative remedies. So we submit scoping comments, and then we submit comments on the environmental assessment or the environmental impact statement. And then if we don't like the decision they make, we then object to it. And if that still doesn't work, then our only recourse is to file a lawsuit. And we found out some great success a couple days ago. We had sued on a project to log and burn 42,000 acres near Yellowstone Park in Idaho. And the project was called the Middle Fork Henry's Project. And it was proposed under the Trump administration using a categorical exclusion, which meant that they didn't go through the National Environmental Policy Act to let the public have a say in it. So we filed a lawsuit, and the Biden administration reviewed it and pulled the decision 2 days ago. So we're real happy about protecting 42,000 acres in grizzly bear and lynx and wolverine habitat on the western border of Yellowstone National Park.
Oh, that's great news. And what has it been like moving from the Trump administration to the Biden administration? Like, what sorts of requests are you and your partners submitting to the agencies right now?
Well, we asked them to review timber sales that we think violate their policy. They're currently reviewing timber sales that or logging and burning projects where they use categorical exclusions to not go through the National Environmental Policy Act on projects bigger than 3,000 acres. So we asked them to review all of those. They're also reviewing projects that log in inventory growthless areas and old growth forests. So we sent them a long list of projects in the Northern Rockies that we think fall under that. And so the first one we've heard them respond to was this Middle Fork Henry's project in Idaho, which Trout Unlimited said the Middle Fork of the Henry's River is the number one trout fishing river in all of the lower 48. So it's not only habitat for grizzly bears and lynx, but great habitat for native fish.
Yeah, the Henry's Fork is definitely a popular river with fly fishermen, no question. And what is the Northern Rockies Ecosystem Protection Act?
Well, it was written by scientists like John Craighead, who was named by National Geographic as one of the top scientists of the 20th century for his work studying grizzly bears, and the founder of the Alliance for the Wild Rockies, Mike Bader, and other citizens and scientists in the Northern Rockies to protect habitat for native species with a focus on using umbrella species such as grizzly bear and bull trout, because if we protect the habitat for these species, we protect the habitat for species that have similar needs. And as you know, we're in the middle of the sixth great extinction on Earth, and ecologists say that one of the few places we have a chance of stopping this is in Western North America because of our large expanse of public lands. And so we're trying to connect the population of grizzly bears in Yellowstone to the rest of the population of grizzly bears in the lower 48, which is mainly centered around Glacier National Park and the Bob Marshall ecosystem. And so this, unlike a lot of wilderness bills before Congress, this is an ecosystem bill. So it tries to protect an entire ecosystem rather than using the traditional state-by-state approach, because, native species habitat doesn't necessarily follow political boundaries. What they found out is that places like Yellowstone National Park aren't big enough to protect species over the long term. They need more habitat, so we have to protect an ecosystem. And Yellowstone was created in, 1876, don't remember the exact date, as the world's first national park. Now we have 100 countries around the world have national parks. And so we think it's time the U.S. be a leader in conservation again and create the first bill to protect an entire ecosystem. And so we would do this by designating all 23 million acres in the Northern Rockies of inventoried roadless areas as wilderness, and then protect the connecting corridors between these wilderness areas so species can connect and recover. The problem is when species become isolated, such as in Yellowstone Park, you're at risk for inbreeding. And once inbreeding sets in the population, they're doomed.
What are your hopes for wolverine getting listed at some point?
Well, we're suing on it again. We've sued before, and the judge ordered the Trump administration to reconsider their decision. I think the science is very clear that wolverine need to be listed. There's only around 300 wolverine left in the lower 48. Climate change is a problem for wolverines because female wolverines den in snowpacks because they can store food for their kits, I believe young wolverine are called, in these snowpacks. They need to have denning sites where the snow still stays deep enough to have a den late into the summer. But the other problem with wolverine is they're very secretive. They avoid humans. So you need places like wilderness areas to have secure habitat for wolverine. And one of the advantages of protecting all these forests is forests are incredible carbon sinks. National forests absorb about 10% of the carbon that America emits every year. So protecting all this land is a free way to protect an amazing carbon sink.
So how does endangered species protection, like relisting the gray wolf or listing the wolverine, how does this dovetail with wilderness protection? Like how can they play off of one another?
Well, wilderness provides the best secure habitat for endangered species to recover. And if a species is listed, then the Forest Service has much more strict rules to follow when they want to log or clear cut an area, and they have to consult with the Fish and Wildlife Service to make sure what they're doing isn't going to cause the species to go extinct. If they're listed, critical habitat is also designated, and in critical habitat, you can't do anything to harm the species as opposed to causing it to go extinct. It affords strong protection for this habitat until Congress can designate it as wilderness.
Okay, so they can both help out in getting you towards your goal. It'll help to protect the wilderness and undisturbed character of roadless lands before they can become wilderness.
Right. Another unique part of the Northern Rockies Ecosystem Protection Act is we have a wildlands recovery component where it would employ about 2,300 people to obliterate or fully remove about 6,300 miles of old logging roads in wildlife corridors. It would almost all timber sales in the Northern Rockies lose money right now. They lose about $1,400 per acre. So if we put these roadless areas permanently off limits to logging and reduce the amount of logging in the connecting corridors, we can use some of the savings from that to employ these people. So the net result would be more people would be employed, taxpayers would save money, and we would protect the environment. And one advantage of restoration work, it's very labor intensive. Logging has become very capital intensive. They use, you know, bigger and better equipment every year, so less and less people are employed. But if you're going to fully remove a logging road and recontour the land to what it looked like before, you have to use a lot of people out there with, you know, hand tools besides heavy equipment. And because it would be a federal government project, it would be done at, under the Davis-Bacon Act, which requires union-level wages for big government contracts. So these are good, high-paying jobs.
And does the Northern Rockies Ecosystem Protection Act have any legislative buyout provisions for livestock grazing?
Yes, it does. It's similar to the Boulder White Clouds wilderness bill that Congressman Simpson from Idaho passed a few years ago, where it has a voluntary buyout provision for grazing. So if the rancher who has the grazing allotment would like to be bought out and that allotment permanently be removed, then NRRIPA gives that as an option.
And what sort of economic opportunities might come after passing NRRIPA and thinking about transitioning from an extraction-based economy to something else?
Well, besides the wildland recovery portion, which was modeled after the CCC, Civilian Conservation Corps, during the Great Depression, numerous economic studies show that the big driver of the economy in the Northern Rockies are wilderness areas and national parks. So places like Bozeman, Montana, Jackson Hole, Wyoming, are booming right now because they're both near wilderness areas and Yellowstone National Park. Same with communities around Glacier Park or areas that are near wilderness in Idaho. If we permanently protect these areas, we're protecting our best economic asset, which is better than the current policy, which we're subsidizing its destruction when we have money-losing timber sales.
What have you heard from various Native American tribes in the area about this proposal? Are they generally for it, or what are you hearing from them?
It depends on the tribe. I mean, no tribe has taken an official position for or against, but generally, if we ask smaller groups of these different Indian nations, the traditional groups support NRRIPA and have testified for it in Congress. But again, no tribe has taken an official position. It has a unique provision where tribes are given guaranteed access to all their religious sites. And near Glacier Park and the Blackfeet Indian Reservation, there's a place called the Badger Two Medicine, which is the Blackfeet consider it a sacred religious site, and it's Forest Service land now. So it would be managed, giving the Blackfeet full access to their traditional sacred sites, and it must be managed so none of these sacred sites would be.
I'll pay attention next time I'm looking through the bill to take a look at that, because that's going to be either a big roadblock or something that could help wilderness bills pass into the future. The Native American component is becoming more and more spotlighted right now. So it's going to be interesting to see how we can make wilderness work going forward while also respecting Native American heritage and, you know, just kind of carrying that ball forward.
Well, when NARIPA was written, the different traditional groups in the Northern Rockies were consulted and it was approved. The language was approved by them. So I'm confident that it wouldn't impede on any of these Native people's religious rights.
Are there any notable supporters of NARIPA outside of Congress?
Well, President Jimmy Carter wrote a letter of endorsement. One of our biggest supporters is singer-songwriter Carole King. She's an amazing lobbyist. She's responsible for most co-sponsors we have in Congress because she doesn't take no for an answer. When we've had hearings, we've had different conservation biologists come and testify about the need of protecting an ecosystem. At the last hearing, Dr. Bill Newmark from the University of Utah testified, and he became famous because he took the idea of island biogeography that E.O. Wilson developed, that the bigger the island was, the more native species that it had, and used it to analyze national parks in the West, and found out that the bigger the national park, the more native species it had. And he also discovered that none of these national parks were big enough, and that's why we need to protect ecosystems rather than just national parks.
Why is the Wilderness Society not supporting NARIPA?
Well, they did originally. They've become more of a collaborative group where they support, they work with the timber industry to support timber sales. I can't read their minds, but from what they have written, they think that it's a better way to advance their cause if they can collaborate with the other side. The problem with that is it's not a scientific approach. So what scientists like John Craighead found, that if we want grizzly bears to survive in the long run, which is at least 100 years, we have to protect all of the inventoried roadless areas in the Northern Rockies and the connecting corridors. We can't just say, oh, well, we can protect half of them. It's just not enough habitat for them to survive. And same goes for, you know, other species like Canada lynx or bull trout or wolverine. You know, it has to be based on science rather than a political approach.
Do you know of any other bills that seek to protect such a big area as yours?
Well, it was modeled after the Alaskan Lands Act that was passed in the 70s when Jimmy Carter was president. It was passed over the opposition of the Alaskan congressional delegation with the idea that, you know, public lands throughout the United States belong to all Americans, not to people in that state. Some environmentalist, I forget whom at the moment, said that we didn't leave the solving the civil rights problem up to the Mississippi congressional delegation. We shouldn't leave, mm-hmm. you know, this problem of disappearing habitat and declining native species up to the local congressional delegation. And, you know, over time, almost every major national park or wilderness area that when it was first designated was opposed by the local politicians. For example, Yellowstone Park was opposed by the political community in Montana and the business community, same with Glacier Park. When President Johnson declared a national monument for what became Capitol Reef National Park, the town of Boulder, Utah, which is near there, was briefly renamed Johnson's Folly because they thought that Johnson was going to destroy their economy. And now when the federal government shuts down, Utah begs to be allowed to pay to keep the national parks in Utah open because there's such a strong economic boom for the state of Utah. So Yellowstone is famous throughout the country, right? And the animals that live there. So we think this is clearly a national issue and it shouldn't be left up to each state's delegation.
This is such a bold and audacious bill, and I just love it. I mean, you know, like you said, for the biological reasons alone, it should be passed just to help to ensure that grizzly bear and lynx and wolverine and bull trout, you know, actually have a shot at such a crazy future that we're looking at. And
well, and
yeah,
I'm sorry to interrupt. You know, the extractive industries that are fighting NARIPA, they're declining anyhow. Timber production in Montana is falling, but the jobs are falling faster just because of what I mentioned earlier, mechanization. I did a paper when I was in graduate school and I found that in the late 1990s, one person could cut in an hour what it took two people to cut in a day 10 years earlier. Well, that was, you know, over 20 years ago, so that what one person can cut now is, compared to the late 90s, has grown amazingly. There's not as much employment in the timber industry as there was in the past. So the question is, do we want to keep this dying industry alive by subsidizing it, which we've been doing with below-cost timber sales, at the price of not only all this money we spend, but of causing these species to go extinct? Or do we want to put a lot of these loggers to work restoring the land and keep these species from going extinct? And I think most Americans would choose the latter.
Yeah, and you know, I'm so glad that you guys are speaking up and carrying this bill forward when so many of the big greens are just unwilling to do it. They fear that their business model might implode. but
yeah, I think really that's the reason the Wilderness Society isn't supporting it, that they get more money from big businesses when they support ideas of less wilderness rather than more wilderness.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if I work in conservation protections, and if I could snap my fingers tomorrow and have all the wilderness protected, the roadless lands as wilderness protected, and all the cows off the public lands, I would be ecstatic. I would say, okay, what's next, right? I mean, mission accomplished. Let's move on to restoration now. This is amazing.
Well, a lot of big groups don't support it because they think it doesn't have any chance, but in American history, the big, bold ideas usually take a long time to come to fruition. And an example is the Civil Rights Act. You know, different groups were pushing for civil rights for African Americans ever since the Civil War ended. But we didn't get a Civil Rights Act passed until the 1960s. And we're still fighting about civil rights. So NARIPA was first introduced in 1992. It's now almost 30 years later, and it hasn't passed, but we are making progress. It was originally only introduced in the House, but in 2016, we also got it introduced in the Senate. And in the last Congress, we had 16 co-sponsors in the Senate and 44 in the House. And I think as time goes on, we can keep building momentum. And you never know. Look at same-sex marriage. No one, you know, almost all Democrats, including Obama, were first against it. And just in a short amount of time, gay marriage was legalized. So we have a democracy. You know, ideas can change fairly quickly.
Yeah, that's a great point. That happened very quickly, and it came down from a Supreme Court ruling, right?
The Supreme Court, they generally don't try and get ahead of the public. So before they'd ruled against same-sex marriage and a lot of equal rights for gay and lesbians and transgender people, but the public attitude has changed. And so I think the Supreme Court decision reflected the change in public attitude.
Mm-hmm.
So I have the same hope that will help happen as far as wilderness, that the public will once again support the ideas of protecting large areas of public land so native species won't go extinct.
So what sort of work is being done in Congress right now to move the NARIPA ball forward?
Well, Senator Whitehouse is the lead sponsor in the Senate, and Congress woman Maloney is the lead sponsor in the House. And because right now they're focused on getting the Biden cabinet confirmed and in office, they don't want to reintroduce it until March. But March is only a few days away, so it should be reintroduced sometime next month.
And are you hearing the drumbeats of 30 by 30 and Wilderness and NREPA? Is everything all manifesting and appearing before their eyes right now?
Well, we are certainly taking advantage of the 30 by 30 initiative to build support for NREPA. It obviously has a strong scientific backing.
How did you manage to introduce NREPA and get so many supporters outside of, let's just call them the traditional channels? Like, I know Carole King was really instrumental, but what else really went right for you guys, would you say?
Well, I think just the bill itself is sound. It has obviously has a strong scientific backing, as evidenced by 30 by 30, but it also has a strong economic backing because, as I mentioned before, these timber industries jobs are declining with or without NREPA. And so we will put people to work at high-paying union-level jobs doing restoration work. And then finally, it protects the economic engine of the Northern Rockies, which is our amazing public lands. I mean, people come to places like Yellowstone and Glacier not only to see the landscape, but also to see the native species that are there. You know, when wolves were reintroduced here, you know, it's the highlight of a lot of people's life to go to Yellowstone and see a wolf or hear a wolf howl. I think all Americans not only value native species, but the public land that forms our habitat.
Well, I'll be very excited to continue watching NREPA and hoping that Congress can think big and really try to meet this challenge that we're facing now with our climate and biodiversity and pollution crises right now. It's really a trifecta.
Well, I think we have a good opportunity because it looks like Congresswoman Deb Haaland is going to be confirmed as Secretary of Interior, and she has been a co-sponsor of NREPA. Bernie Sanders is now the head of the Budget Committee in the Senate. He's a co-sponsor of NREPA. Carolyn Maloney has been in Congress for a long time. She's a committee chairwoman. So we have a lot of high-powered supporters now.
That's very exciting. Well, Mike, how can people learn more about the Alliance for the Wild Rockies?
They can go to our website, allianceforthewildrockies.org, and learn both about NREPA and what the Alliance is doing to try and get it passed. And then we ask that they contact their member of Congress and ask them to co-sponsor NREPA. Again, a lot of environmental groups don't support it because they think it doesn't have any chance of passing, but it would pass if it got a lot more environmental support.
Yeah.
So
it's like willfully.
Yeah. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. It won't pass if a lot of groups won't support it, but
yeah,
we continue to make progress every Congress. And I think if more people contact their member of Congress and ask them to co-sponsor it, and it will eventually pass. Another example is the $15 minimum wage. When that first was proposed, I think no one thought anybody had a chance in hell in getting a $15 minimum wage, but the Democrats in Congress are strong supporters of it now, including Bernie Sanders, and lots of cities and states around the country have enacted the $15 minimum wage. So it can be done if enough people support it.
What would you say to wilderness groups who are working on proposals that fall within the area of NREPA? And as far as strategy and looking forward, staying positive, all that sort of stuff?
Well, I would ask them to support NREPA. A lot of groups try and say they just want to support areas, wilderness, that's their favorite area. The problem with that is if you just protect a certain part of the Northern Rockies, you're not protecting the entire ecosystem, and then you have smaller areas and species that aren't interacting with other species and inbreeding results, and then they go extinct. So we can't just protect the low-hanging fruit. We have to do a scientific approach and protect an ecosystem rather than just different groups' favorite areas to go backpacking.
Excellent.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Okay.
And again, well, that's what the scientists ask. That's what the scientists say. Like when different groups come to them and ask them for their endorsement of a particular wilderness area, a lot of conservation biologists have told me they can't support it because it's not scientific, because it doesn't protect enough area for these species to not go extinct. And that's the whole idea behind the 30 by 30 approach.
Oh, I thought it was all recreation. That was a joke.
Yeah, well, that's maybe another reason why some of these big groups don't support it, because they think they can get more support by focusing on recreation rather than using a scientific approach.
Yeah, sad state of affairs, but
exercise is important to have good health, so it's important to go out and recreate. But, you know, if you break your leg, don't exercise more to cure it. You go to a doctor and get your broken leg fixed. So we need to follow science, not just use recreation as our guiding point.
Anything you want to say to close out, and with 30 by 30 in mind, and just looking back on your time fighting for NREPA?
Well, I'm repeating myself, but I think everybody should dream big. And I think that's, if you look at American history, that's where we've had big changes, is people don't take no for an answer. And when they do that, big changes happen, rather than civil rights or the gay rights, economic rights. You know, unions are another example. You know, we have the 40-hour work week, and because child labor is outlawed, because unions fought hard for that for decades. So environmentalists, if they don't want species to go extinct in the West, we need to push for protecting ecosystems. And we also, it's a great way to fight climate change and global warming, is public lands are great carbon sinks. So that's another advantage of 30 by 30.
Be great to see the roadless areas for all the rest of the Western states all get mushed into one American Ecosystem Protection Act. Any talk of that?
We would love to enlarge NREPA to protect everything and have a connecting corridors from the Rockies down to Mexico, but we've been focused on the Northern Rockies. If other groups would like to protect the Central and Southern Rockies to connect to the Northern Rockies, we'd be happy to join in.
You've got a big enough area already. Okay, yeah. Mike, thanks for your time. Thanks for the great work you guys are doing. Like I said, you're just kind of mostly flying under the radar, doing important work, and I'm really excited to bring your work more to light on this program with my listeners. So thank you so much for all the great work that you do and your dedication. It's very inspiring.
Well, thank you very much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Wilderness Podcast. You can find us online at wildernesspodcast.com. Don't forget to subscribe through your podcasting app. If you'd like to support this podcast, please visit wildernesspodcast.com/support. Thanks for listening.